Again, for those of you just joining us, my name is Brian, and I will be the moderator on today's call. To be getting started in about 1 minute with our Conversion Erosion Conference. If you haven't already done so, please point your web browser to marketingexperimentsblog.com. We will ask you to refresh that page several times throughout the conference as we add some data and other notes. Star 4 will increase the volume on your line if you're having any trouble hearing. You won't need to worry about muting or unmuting your line, as we will be staying in lecture mode for the duration of today's call. If you have any questions, please send them questions related to the content, the presentation. Please send them to questions@marketingexperiments.com, and we will attempt to answer them live on the phone. At this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. Flint McLaughlin, who will be this afternoon's primary presenter.
Okay, Brian, thank you very much. I'm just prepping something that you may have heard. I'm going to add something to the program that's not in our prepared notes. I believe it's coming in just now, so let's get started. Conversion erosion is the topic, and it's a critical subject. I think it's primarily new in terms of internet writing. I think many of our retail groups that we have studied and service groups think of optimization as a event instead of a process. And typically we'll work to get a page thoroughly optimized and then move on to other priorities in their site. It's a natural way to approach the problem, but in many cases I think we are leaving significant revenue on the table. After achieving high conversions from an optimized landing or offer page after even a few weeks or months, it's not unusual to see a slow but steady decline in conversion rates. In fact, we kind of set out to look at this topic and to study the decline of a highly optimized page. We're constantly involved in the process of testing, as you know here, and we looked at and did a study of a site that we have been doing a tremendous amount of research with over an extended period of time, more than a year, and watched the trend in conversion on a page that was, I think, at the time that we launched it, the most optimized page of its sort in the category. Certainly, it's probably one of the most successful sites of its type in the category, and it's been extremely it's driven a great deal of revenue, which has been useful in helping people, as is part of what this site is about. So we'll look at that in just a moment. I'm actually coming to you from Columbia University today. I'm in the midst of lectures, and I've slipped into a classroom, and I'm looking at a room full of empty chairs with my computers set up to conduct this class. I may not be able to, I'm just here as a guest, but I may not. If I have any technical difficulties, you please forgive me. I think we're all set up properly. With that in mind, we're going to move right to some of our data. Brian, have you got the link to Hansen's?
I do. It's link number 6 in the URLs.
If you would go to link number 6 in the URLs, I've asked them to drop this in. It's not part of the original notes, but there's been a great deal of talk about this site today. I guess Seth Godin came across it, and our optimization group worked very closely, very carefully on the copy on the home page. And marketers around the internet have been discussing the effect of this home page, in particular the letter that was carefully written. And I don't think Seth knows that our team was involved in the research and actually developed this. And Jimmy Ellis, our director of optimization, along with Nick Usborne, I think, were carefully involved. And I think Guy Tasaka, Guy is on our research team also. Guy was a former director of research at the New York Times, and he's been conducting research with us. The page has received an inordinate amount of traffic today, largely because of all the blogs that are talking about it. They identified very carefully with the text in this letter. And they should. This is very effective text. It improves conversion. It personalizes the site. It uses quantified reasons as to why you would want to do business with this group. It is just the beginning, really, of a series of tests that we're getting ready to run. We've been doing research with this group, I think, not more than a month. But we launched this test, changing the home page primarily to copy and some of the design and layout. in a test series that has just begun. They're all talking about it. And my point is, when we're done testing, there'll be a major increase in conversion, and the site will move on to other priorities. But the question I want to ask you in the audience this afternoon is, how long should this site rest with its new optimized design? Now, a glib answer, knowing that we're in the research business, might be that, well, you should continue to test it all the time. But glib as it is, and likely as it sounds, it's not realistic, because we know just from the research that we've laid out for the next several months with this group that there must be a number of tests done on various other parts of the site and also on the channel side in terms of the traffic. So then, how do you prioritize what you should do first, second, and third? And in the answer to that question, you must go back to the original question, and that is, how often does this site need research on this landing page to be conducted? It's critical to you, because you either have a page that you need to optimize, or you are optimizing one now, or you just finished optimizing one. And it has been my experience that many of us get done, breathe a sigh of relief, and then rush off to the next project. I think we have to be careful, and we're going to look at some data. And so I'm going to return to my actual lecture notes and look at our first study. And in this study, we looked at the conversion rates of a company you've become familiar with, because we've used it a lot in our research. We use it a lot because we have full permission to use all of the data. Sometimes some of our partners, like the New York Times or Reuters, we have to be very cautious about what we can share with you. And at any rate, the company was the National Alert Registry. And let me say this also, and please don't think this is some type of commercial for MEC. It's not. You may not know how we work with these companies. I think there's some lack of clarity even out there as to what we do. We are not a consulting group. We do research partnerships with key groups, and we learn together. And we do that with a few groups and conduct extensive research, and that's where these test cases come from. We also conduct research on properties that we have major investments in. We do that deliberately because it allows us to be more liberal with the data and the designs that we share with you. But we think that if we don't actually make partnerships with groups like Hansen's, we can't be as effective when we're trying to talk to you as a retailer as to what would be the best way for you to conduct your research. I want to work in with real scenarios. The Internet allows me to get real-time data like I could not get 10 years ago in research. It's phenomenal what we can learn, even in a week. And so that's why you see us referring to research partnerships, and Hansen's is a group like that, and we're just conducting research with them on growth, and they'll get an enormous boost in conversion and things like that. So here is this nationalalertregistry.com. It uses a number of marketing channels, including pay-per-click, natural search, and PR. And we're going to drop into your notes a table that shows site-wide conversion in a basically 3-4 month clusters. So, Brian, let me know when that's been dropped into the notes.
It should be ready.
Okay, so now you should be able to refresh your page, and as you do, you should see a table, and that table should lay out for you the results. Now, I present the data knowing that it's going to be released in a report, and I often don't spend a long time dwelling on the data, because you should be receiving a full report on this within a week or two, and it will lay out for you every aspect of our research in this area, and it won't have some of the comments you get live in the clinics and the interaction. So I think the clinics are unique in that way, but it will be able to codify some of the things that I'm talking to you about now. And when we shift rapidly through a conversion or through a table, it's useful if we're just getting to some key fact at the bottom. But I think in this case, you need to look at it for a little bit. First of all, notice December 2004, and you'll see that it's a 2.0 conversion rate. I remember when Jimmy Ellis and our conversion group went to work on that little site. It was a small site then, and we had a research partner who had a major interest in it. And Jimmy had really made a substantial impact in conversion, both in channels and in optimization with their group, and they said, could you take a look at this small site for us? We looked at it. Jimmy optimized the page, and I think I can tell you almost exactly, I need to do the math in my head, I think revenue grew from December to January, something right in there, about 800%. Now, I didn't just say conversion. I said revenue, eight times as much revenue after one conversion pass. And that got the conversion up to 2.0%, which is good because the site was getting significant traffic. And I think the larger your traffic, the harder it is to maintain a high conversion rate. We're doing experimentation right now with using video and in the conversion process, and we're going to be releasing several reports on that. You need to pay very careful attention to that, and you need to get into those clinics because you may discover some. We're hitting conversion rates of 10% plus, but I think most people are doing it incorrectly, and it's costing them money. It is not producing the yield that it should. But I've seen this 10% hold up with pretty significant traffic. Now, it was very qualified traffic, but it was a large traffic source. In general, though, I see traffic get diluted as larger groups come in. And when sites tell me what their overall conversion rate is, I'm not nearly as impressed as I am when I can look at that conversion rate by the channel. If you were to tell me, well, our conversion rate is 9%, it sounds really important, but let me look at it across pay-per-click, house lists, organic search, affiliate programs, and your banner campaign if you have one. And then I can start to know, you know, what's really there. It's just too broad a number to be meaningful. Because if those things shift, it may go up or may go down, and you still may be doing. It may go down, and you're doing better, but you can't quantify it with that broad number. In this case, 2% was really quite good. The site generated significant revenue, and then you'll notice the slow decline, 1.79. Now February it goes to 1.9 and 2.17. Now there's a reason for that, very important reason. We're going to come back to that later. I won't tell you now. 4-month average is 1.965. Now, look at the next 4 months. Significant drop. 0.75. And then again, a significant drop. And look at the bottom, the 4-month average, the bottom of your table. 0.538. What you need to understand, the conversion rate for the 3 4-month clusters was 1.965%, 0.648%, and 0.538%. Quickly do the math, one of my team members, if you would, and give me the precise decline rate. And I want that in the key points in our notes, if you could make that adjustment. I want the differential. It's a division problem from 1.965% and the 0.538%. Let's look at the percentage of decline. In fact, any one of you that's in the audience can make the same calculation and fire an email to Brian. I can do it in my head just about, but let's get it precise. This site that was highly optimized in December of 2004 became increasingly less effective over time in terms of conversion. What caused the conversion rates to erode? And could we have done something to prevent it? Now, that's a critical question. And as I'm speaking this afternoon, you may have questions, and if that's the case, please send them to questions@marketingexperiments.com. Is that correct, Brian?
Yep.
And Brian will forward them to me, and we'll sort through the questions, and I'll try to answer some of them throughout the call today. Interestingly, the three individual months in which the site received additional media exposure proved to be the best months in their overall time period. So let's look at those months. That's very critical. There's a new table we want to drop into your notes. April, October, and May were critical months. And there you'll see reasonably significant differentials in conversion. Now why? Because the topic received significant media attention. You need to be advised that when there is any type of media that's impacting, say, one of the search terms that your site is deriving traffic from, it will impact overall your conversion rate. In fact, today we were looking at this site that we started off this call with, and we noticed traffic issues. And while we were grateful for all the media attention because it helped the research partner, sent more people to the site, perhaps it generated more orders, aggregate, it actually hurt conversion in a test that we were running. And Guy Tasaka, Guy, are you on the line? He may be muted. I think he's on the line. I'm not sure if he's in lecture mode or not. But Guy Tasaka, who oversaw this test, was from our team, was actually not excited. Everyone else was, but he's trying to run a test without what we call an external effect or an external validation effect. And really, the new attention skewed our conversion rate test on this page because there were many people coming to see the page just because Seth talked about it and they wanted to see what it was and they weren't there to buy, and so overall conversion went down, though it may be that aggregate sales went up. The point would be that when you're running these types of tests, just be careful of any of these external factors. We teach that in our certification program, all of the various forms of validation errors. In our second study, we looked at 15 months of conversion data for a health products company. And again, we're going to look at this. I want to move through, look at this data, and then get very practical with you as to what you can do to keep from losing money over the course of the next few months because of a lack of understanding about this problem. And there should be a new table dropped in your notes. It's, again, a fairly substantial table. Brian, let me know when that's in.
It should be ready.
All right, so if you look in your notes, you'll see a new table. It's ugly like the first one, but useful. And that table reflects the latest from this research. And you'll see February 2005 through April 2006. It's important to note the drop in conversion. In February, it was 0.40%. Let me stop you there. I get asked, one of the most frequent questions I get asked if I'm speaking in a, lecturing somewhere is, how do we benchmark our conversion? And there's a lot of money made with benchmark studies. And I'm not, by the way, making a sideways poke at my friend Dan Holland or Sherpa. Benchmark studies can be useful. But there are some things that are very difficult for you to benchmark. And there are certain cases where a 0.40% conversion rate is not bad. It, a lot has to do with the quality of your traffic sources. And please know this. In the end of the end of the day, it's not your conversion rate that matters. It's your profits. And there are times when I have shocked a team, a marketing team, by suggesting we make certain moves that we know are going to cause degradation of a conversion rate. Because in the end, it's going to cause a much larger traffic group to see the site, and that's going to, even at a lower conversion rate, translate into more revenue, and often more profitable revenue because of the fact that we were able to secure that traffic through some type of strategic alliance or at a very low to no cost. Let me give you another example. Organic pages, pages that you're driving organic search to, are often, it's very difficult to tune them up for optimized conversion. We have a difficult challenge right now with a site that's receiving very significant traffic because of its organic search rankings, particularly in Google. But the site is horrible. And the trick in this research project, and we're going to be teaching this to you later as part of why we did this, how do you optimize a site where you have significant organic rankings that you're afraid of diminishing through your optimization efforts. Ideally, if you plan it right from the beginning, you can have a site that is both optimized for the organic engines and in some sense for the pay-per-click engines with unique landing pages. But in this case, it's not the way, it's not, the challenge is different. And the point I want to make for you is, overall, a site may have a lower conversion rate from this organic, even though organic search typically will convert higher than pay-per-click search. Not in every case, but in many cases that I have seen. Overall, because of the volume of traffic coming to a site that is poorly designed, you may see lower conversion, but significantly more revenue because of the serious amount of organic traffic and the profitability of that traffic. So if your site is at 0.40, by all means, try to get it to 4.0. But bear in mind that you need to look at the quality of your traffic. In this case, this retailer has been very profitable, very successful, and he's gone from a 0.40 down to a 0.28 in April. And again, there were months in which the site received a boost in conversion due to optimization efforts, but the site could not sustain long-term gains in conversion. In addition, overall traffic decreased over time. Now, if you're in the retail business, I want to give you a solemn, holy warning right now. You need to pay attention to this chart because you may be in this place. And I'll tell you what I'm looking at. I'm looking at a retailer that's not going to have a business in 3 years if he doesn't realize this trend and reverse it. I have seen this. I'm thinking right now of a retailer who, they were a fine team. I like them. I saw the handwriting on the wall within 2 months of research and warned them. They fought tooth and nail to turn around, but what they were doing was trying to market a site that had a diminishing value proposition because of increased competition, and thus everything they did in marketing got harder. And now they're in debt and having to shut the business down. Please listen. What worked on the internet 2 years ago will not work 2 years more from now. They used to tell you, well, if you can just get on there and hold 1% of the market, well, the net's growing so fast that, you'll be wealthy just by maintaining a share of that 1%. As that 1% will become more and more in terms of real people because of the new people from around the world that are joining or that are, you know, on the line. The problem with that is they forgot to tell you that at the same time that you're getting more people on the net, you're getting more retailers on the net. And you may have had a value proposition that was relatively weak, but it was ultimate. You were one of the only businesses offering product X with service Y. And now you're one of 100 voices. There may be thousands, but you're one of 100, and there's 10 good competitors. And you're fighting tooth and nail to maintain a marketing advantage. When what you need to go back, what you need to do is go back and build a strategic advantage because you've lost it. First is a strategic move, but first is not enough, particularly when things are moving at the speed of light, as they seem to be on the internet. This is a retailer who needs to pay attention to conversion erosion, and it's very critical for him to pay attention to it because it's not just a sign that he needs to optimize his pages. He doesn't have just a diminishing amount. Here's the big three to watch for. When your conversion is going down, when your traffic is going down, and accordingly your profits are going down, then you don't just have a problem with optimizing a landing page. You've got something else, and you better pay close attention. It's time to declare war, I mean tomorrow, or else you're going to find yourself I don't mean to be folksy, but I live on the beach, and our offices are on the beach here, and the way we cook a crab is we put it in hot water, and if you put a crab in hot water, he'll just climb out. And I had a friend that tried that, and she had crabs all over her kitchen. You put them in warm water and slowly warm it while they're in there, and they'll stay in that pot until you've cooked them. And that's where some of our retail friends are on the internet right now. They don't realize it, but they're getting cooked, and they need to pay attention. So if you'll look at this, we see this conversion dropping dramatically. And overall, the decrease was most likely from two factors. The writers in this report, I didn't write this this paragraph, said they called it decreased uniqueness of the product due to increased competition. That's a polite way to say, that they lost the value proposition. And then they said less off-the-web promotion, which is critical. And by the way, you should be promoting offline in most cases. And that's another issue, and that's another journal report that we'll release at some point. And here's the key. Competitive analysis is essential to determine if and how your competitors may be taking business away from you. Now, that means that you need to pay far more attention to your competitors than you might be doing at the present moment. Not the nervous, frantic kind of attention that comes with you being frightened of their every move. Just the quiet, calculating kind of attention that makes you take note of changes on their site. It was much harder to understand the world of an offline competitor in times past. You had to talk to their sales force and talk to your customers that might have ordered from them and order products. It was very difficult compared to today. Today, you can look at the entire sales process in one click. There you are. Walk through it. And yet, many of us do not take the time to do serious competitive analysis. And by the way, don't just ape them. Just because they've changed doesn't mean you need to change. In most cases, their changes aren't productive or effective, but you need to pay attention to the changes that might have some indication of working. There's ways to figure that out also. And we teach you how to do that. In fact, we have an entire report on this, and it tells you how to do brief competitive analysis, internet style. And Brian, what is the link on that?
That is link number 2 in the list of URLs.
And it's free. I'm not selling anything here, but I would recommend that you download the report and study it, and we'll talk more about that as we get right now into actual guidelines. Now, guidelines are important because we're going to talk to you about what to do with the information that we just talked about. Brian pointed out that the overall decrease in conversion in that first test that we looked at was 72.6%. That's horrific. And we need to know what to do. I've got some questions that have come in, and Carly, I need you to resend your question. It says, is optimization for search engines or conversions? And I'm not sure I understand that precisely. We certainly optimize for search engines, both organic and pay-per-click, with distinct landing pages. But, you know, that's an issue that we can perhaps clarify either later in this call, or again, if you'll send... In these calls, as long as you're not sending me your website, I can't optimize everyone's website after a call like this because we have so many people that respond to us. But we really do try to answer your other questions. And we're developing a forum where we can get more of the interaction between this community because this is a very fast-growing community of online marketers and researchers. And we want to help you get answers. We're all trying to get answers. And here's a question that came in today. It says, have there been any documented cases of conversions being hijacked and redirected to competitors? Well, yes. I mean, I can give you one of the easiest ways to do that is it's almost like domain phishing. It's I think of a site right now that has just a tiny variation of another high traffic site that has a major television alliance, and so the TV program sends traffic to their sister site, but someone else has a domain so similar to the television program that they're siphoning off large blocks of that traffic. And that's one case where that occurs. And I think there's some other questions, but we're going to keep going. And so let's look at guidelines. If you've got more questions, please send them. I'm going to answer some more as we continue. So what can we do about this? Well, first of all, obviously we need to continue to test. What works one month may not continue to work as the market evolves. Do not become complacent in your success. This is to say that you need a regular systematic methodology wherein you are testing or monitoring the conversion rates of the key landing pages in your site. It is not hard to get a top 10 list of landing pages or whatever that number may be for you. It might be 2 or 3 or it might be many more. But once you know what they are, you need to develop a report. And that report needs to come to you at least weekly, telling you what the average conversion has been on those key pages. Most of us would be much better at what we do if we had the right information and metrics on our key prime movers, as we call it in MEC's research. Personally, I'm not satisfied with the prime mover research I'm getting back myself in our own sites and work that is done here, although they're working quickly to remedy that. I think that getting the right numbers is a constantly evolving process, and if you think the answer is just to go find a big metrics company and pay them a large check and suddenly the data will come and everything will be better, think again. Because it's very hard to get Omniture, for instance, it's just an example, and I think they've got a good product, or reasonably so, but it's very hard to get that turned into an actionable set of decision facts, and you need that. And one of the things that you need, if you're involved in anything to do with the marketing part of your site, particularly if you're a senior person there, is you need to know each of those prime gateways into your site. You need to monitor the conversion. Do not settle for less. Fight, feud, fuss, and go to war if necessary. But I can tell you from working with many companies that in the end you'll earn respect. When somebody realizes that you are trying to you're trying to do the job right and you're not going to do it in the dark. So my point would be set up a monitoring system and get the key facts. Now, we've written reports on the key metrics, and we're going to be releasing a new report on the most important metrics you want to monitor, but I'll tell you the one today that is germane to this topic, and that is the conversion rates on your key entry points. Also, develop a marketing schedule. We have a merchandising calendar. Again, there's no cost, and a marketing blueprint. And the links are in your notes. The blueprint is really useful. It takes all of these experiments for the last year and puts them together in some kind of order and kind of a blueprint to build your company. I know of major companies, some of the Fortune 100 companies and Fortune 500 companies and medium-sized who actually have built their entire marketing year around that calendar. I think this month I heard of a major group on Wall Street, and I was talking to the marketing to the marketing director, and basically, if I can say this, I can't tell you their name, and if he's on the phone, I hope I'm not saying something that would be inappropriate. All I can tell you is he actually went and took the blueprint, printed it when he was being interviewed for the job, and built a plan around the blueprint and took it in for the job interview and used that to impress them that he had a plan, and he did. And I know him. He'll do a brilliant job. And so pay attention. Get the blueprint. Every step you don't need to take, but it does take – this enormous amount of information on our site from the journal and convert it into a methodology for you. The other thing is the merchandising calendar. Now, if you wonder why I bring that up under this point, it's because conversion rates will change seasonally. You need to be aware of that. For instance, the merchandising calendar will tell you when to increase your pay-per-click bids and when to drop them based on trends we've noticed across the net during the Christmas season, if you're in the retail. Take the Group Hansen's that we were just looking at. Literally, there are certain dates of the year when they should quietly turn up their campaigns. That is, they should increase their bid per click. And I'll tell you something, that's a problem. And most of your large pay-per-click groups that are consultancies, and especially the automated groups, aren't aware of those precise dates. You need to pay attention, program them, and you'll find that on those dates when there are more people seriously shopping, you can pay far more per click and still make more money and get higher placement and have much higher days because you've tuned your pay-per-click to the new conversion opportunity that exists in the marketplace for that specific period of time. So those three things will help. And again, if you got questions about it, fire me some questions. Let me go on. I'll go to point three. I'm just going to check. All right, point three. So use your web metric system to pinpoint the channels, keywords, ad copy, and landing pages that were producing the majority of your sales. If you keep track of trending, you'll be able to identify specifically where many declines are taking place. Many times we discover that a specific source of traffic, such as one of the major search engines, has changed their search rankings, and traffic on key terms is no longer ranked as high as it was, so the overall conversion average goes down. I'd like to write an issue sometime on internet speed as opposed to offline speed in this digital marketplace that we're in right now, because most of us don't recognize that there are losses, major financial losses, that simply occur because we don't have at our fingertips information that we should have had when it came available. In a large multinational offline corporation, there's a speed, it's very difficult to get that information. On the internet, if you lose a search ranking somewhere, you should know it instantly because it's costing you money if you don't take steps to remedy it. And I find this all the time. I find it with our own sites. If you're not putting your eyeballs on the right place, you may see significant changes. And the reason why performance starts to change, it becomes muddy in your mind. And there may be something very distinct, like you lost a major source, or you've got a significant affiliate who suddenly has lost. We had a site where revenue, I don't know, I think it doubled in a single day that we were monitoring and conducting research on. What we discovered was an affiliate of the site had a domain name. Now, this is different, but had a domain name that sounded like the domain name of another site that got mentioned on Dr. Phil. And so many people were going to our affiliate site thinking it was the site from Dr. Phil. They were seeing the ad for the site we were conducting research with, and they were purchasing. We had so many. Jimmy Ellis, are you online? Aaron Rosenthal, are you online? If you guys can talk, if I don't have you blocked off, please interrupt me. I'll give you a moment to do that. Interrupt me. I'm just going to talk until you figure that out. I forgot how many orders we had to try to come through per second, but there were so many orders trying to come through per second that we sent three Rackspace servers down, backup servers down. I mean, it was a disaster virtually, and we had redundancy. Because we had a lot of redundancy built in, and we nearly overwhelmed the entire system. The only thing to say, what's that?
Flint, this is Aaron. We were
yes.
We were during peak periods trying to process 10 orders a second, and it was simply too much.
And what did we have go down, Aaron? I want to be accurate with what I said.
Yeah, we had three Rackspace servers, which are actually our backup. That if our internal servers couldn't handle the load, it was then some of the load was transferred onto the Rackspace servers. We brought down those Rackspace servers when we were trying to keep our servers up, and in fact, we had to circumvent them altogether and keep it internal because they just couldn't handle the load.
If you pay attention to that stuff, see you can we redirected advertising. And turned it into a major financial gain for the research partner. So just bear in mind that you need to pay attention to these key areas. And let me move to four. Now, Nick, are you on? Nick Osborne?
Yes, I'm on.
Nick, have you got anything to add to what we said so far?
No.
Okay. I know you did. I know Brian and Nick did a lot of work on this. So feel free to jump in, Nick, anytime. You think you may have something to add. Monitor your paid advertising placement. Stay on top of competitors, especially in saturated markets. It's essential. The only, Pareto's, the mathematical law of disproportionate results to, essentially we call it the 80-20 rule, but that's actually based on a mathematical law that results are disproportionate or outcomes are disproportionate to end goals. And there's a large portion of your traffic that may be coming from a small portion of your marketing. You need to pay special attention to that. Number five, this is good. I like this point. I didn't put this in here, and it's really quite good. Build your email list and relationships with customers. Your customer list is one source of traffic. Now, I didn't say anything right now that sounds profound. In fact, I probably disappointed you, but let me explain. Your customer list is one source of traffic that is not affected by competition in the marketplace, or at least not as much. By paid advertising or natural search engine results. And there are two things I would like to tell you here that would be critical. I think one of the biggest failures I see on the internet right now is the lack of retailers and service providers to build real community with their customers. And if you build community with those customers, you can often bypass competition and speak directly to those customers. In some cases, even this month, we sent offline direct mailing to the customer and allow them to respond without going to the internet at all to keep them from seeing or encountering any competition. So if you start to turn your customers into a community, you have an opportunity. Now, the community is a word that's a cliche on the internet. I know that, and we say it all the time. But I'll venture to say that and this is not a statistic, it's just an estimate on my own part. But 8 out of 10 sites I see on the internet are doing a horrible job of collecting email addresses and of converting email addresses into potential future customers. Many of them, I never cease to be amazed when I talk with a retailer who says, yeah, we have $1.5 million email addresses, you know, from previous orders, and I ask them what they've done with them. And generally, they've all tried something, and it's very anemic, and they've not really even begun to mine the gold that they should have there or build relationship. And now the problem is some of those orders were a year ago, and the opportunity to build a relationship with that person is almost nil. So build customers. Nick, any thoughts on that?
Sorry, I was on mute for a moment.
Go ahead.
Jimmy added that point in, and I mean, I agree with you how important it is.
And yes.
Not only to keep in touch, but to speak with your list, to treat your list with enormous care and respect. And a while ago, I was writing an article, and I made the point that every single time you send an email to your list, you either add to or you diminish the relationship. It depends on the value of what you send each time. So the smart email marketers, whether they be retailers or whatever the nature of their business, really make certain that every email they send out adds value to the relationship. There are far too many marketers out there, and a lot of e-retailers fall into this, where they take the view that the list is simply a static asset. And as soon as you treat your list simply as an asset to mine and to monetize, your readers will sense that, and you will start losing attention, losing loyalty, and losing readership. So the smart companies, yes, they use their list to overcome, like you say, competition, to overcome ups and downs in media coverage, ups and downs in money spent on other advertising, and the quality you can get, the conversion you can get from your house list is phenomenal if you have taken enormous care of it and if you add value every single time you email them. So that's my rant on email list.
Well, Nick is right, and I often get asked questions of frequency, and I think now, this may be different if you're bombarding with ads, but in general, I think in most cases, this is a general rule. I'm not saying this is set in stone, but you need to talk to your list at least twice a month. I worry about monthly conversations. So much time passes, you lose continuity, and I worry about a frequency that's too high depending on the nature of your list and what you're sending. There are clearly some things you can send daily. That's a very rare and unusual type of list. And a lot of people try to do it simply to drive more advertising opportunities when, in fact, they are glutting the opportunity and they're costing themselves subscribers. Be very cautious about that.
I agree. You have to, you can't. There are some segments, like if you subscribe to kind of news updates, you know, whether it's like Google Alerts, then that's fine daily. You know, people sign up for a joke a day, and that's fine on a daily basis. The danger with daily, particularly if the decision is driven, like you say, by increasing the number of ad exposures, is that somebody within the company is having to produce an email daily, and unless you truly have something to add each day, then there is very little value in the email from the reader's point of view. So after a while, people tire of it and no longer open it. So a lot of, and I agree with you, I think minimum frequency should be, you know, a couple of times a month, or people kind of forget your name. But frequency between one day and 2 weeks, I think I would, if I was from an editorial point of view, if I was fighting back the people selling the advertising, I would say that frequency will be determined by, you know, the value of what we send. If we can send real value twice a week, let's do it twice a week. If we can only send real value once a week, then we'll do it once a week.
Absolutely. And that's the precise question to ask, Nick. And I'll tell you this. Now, I'm gonna move on. I've got we're not going to be too much longer, but I do have some important things I want to talk to you about analyzing your search logs in just a moment. But let me just say this. So far, service or retail? I want to address retail, though I know a lot of you are in the service business, and a lot of our issues recently have talked about service businesses, but I just want to say this to you. two big findings should come out of this report so far for you. Despite all the little things that you may glean from what we've discussed so far, you need to get the right metrics in front of your eyeballs, and you need to watch and monitor for conversion erosion. That's number one. And number two, if you were to cut through all the other things that were said, and there's been other things I think were useful, you are probably leaving a lot of money on the table by not maximizing the community building opportunity that you have with all that traffic you're paying for. And we all talk it, but it's like it's become part of the internet retailer's religion. And like a lot of religion, it's more talk than walk. I don't see most of us doing it right. And so let me then move on. Analyze your search logs. If you see significant changes in your conversion, many times analyzing searches performed on your site will provide evidence to what might be causing the decline. Now, this is smart. There's an opportunity for you sometimes to discern what might be happening on your site by going inside of your site itself and studying what people are looking for, what people are asking for. I find one of the richest sources of insight about my audience is their search patterns. And, you know, Google's constantly out there. I mean, they've built their entire multi-billion-dollar enterprise around understanding how customers want to search and gleaning information about their customers from the search process. We just stick a search button up on our site, and if we're lucky, we make sure it's working, and then we move on. I care passionately about what happens in the search side when I'm doing research. It matters. It tells me something. And I would suggest you study those patterns because they may have a clue as to what's happening with your site and why. People may be looking for something and you don't have it. I recall a retailer that we did a bunch of work with, and we noticed that in his pay-per-click there was one search term that was losing so much money. Now, I'm changing now. This is a pay-per-click search term, not a site search term. But on the pay-per-click side, he was losing money in a particular, I'll tell you, it was candles. He had many thousands of products, but he was driving a lot of traffic to his site on candles. And for some reason, it just wasn't converting at all. And he thought he had a pay-per-click problem. I looked at the pattern, and I suspected that he didn't have a pay-per-click problem. He had a retail problem. He had a product problem. So I went to look at his candle selection. And when I got there, there was 11 ugly candles on the page. Now, he's not, you know, I mean, why that's important is because he was losing a lot of marketing budget. And he had one of two options, beef up the candle page or eliminate it altogether and sell what you can sell well and market what you have that, you know, is going to give him some differentiation, and that's what he did. So pay attention to that. Number seven, review your product mix to see if certain product types, and this is what I was just talking about, or definable categories have slowed specifically. Many times a, quote, unnatural, end quote, increase or reduction in conversion will be very specific to a large product category or an ad campaign where seasonal or behavioral changes are spread out more evenly across your product line or offering. Now, that may mean that you have one particular product, whether you're a retailer or a service, that was an important part of your revenue, and now increased competition in that category or some changes there have diminished the overall conversion in that category, and it's hurting your overall site conversion. I've seen that many times. In fact, if I was going to have to go head-to-head against a large retailer, I don't know who I'll pick, Crutchfield. I'm just picking them. I don't know why, just out of the air. But a large air electronics retailer, or let me take a Western Wear store, because there's a large Western Wear store I remember looking at a year ago, the largest in the country. I don't know how I'd beat them by putting together another Western Wear store. It would just be a weak value proposition, but I'd fragment the place. I'd find the one product on their site. I'd do reverse searches in the engine, and I'd find out what it was on their site that was driving the most significant revenue. It might be three to five major products. And out of those three to five, I'd build a specialty product, a specialty website, with that product in the domain name that made you feel like you were going to a specialist site that had the largest selection and the best prices in that one specific category. Then I'd go head-to-head with them in the pay-per-click engines, and I'd get a higher conversion than they would for that very reason. And if it was a very specific thing, I mean, and I might drill down deeply, it might just be snakeskin boots, and I don't wear snakeskin boots. But I would go after those categories. That's a little tighter than I like, but it would be better to have five specialty shops in every version of one in every version of snakeskin boots, another one in whatever that second category is that we found on their site, market them all independently, and you could literally, by fragmenting their position, still maintain some type of value proposition and compete. The danger here is you need to do all five exactly right, extremely well, and we're finally getting to the internet point where you can do that. I would point that out only to say that could be what's happening to you. I've seen that happen with sites. I don't think people were as intentional as what I just described, but specialists came along and began to basically steal market share. All right, so I think we can probably stop here. I have a few more points that I think we'll release in the final report when it comes out. I'll just mention the final point. Conduct an analysis of your competitors once every 6 months. Six is minimal. You know, 3 to 6 months. I would pay attention more frequently, but I would at least do a formal analysis every 6 months. It's not an expensive process. You can actually take MEC's competitive analysis approach, and you can assign it to an intern in your company, and they can do the analysis. And then you make sure you personally visit the two or three most important sites yourself. And it's an inexpensive way to learn a great deal and to protect your future. All right, so I think we're going to draw this to a close. I see more questions coming in. Let me see. The first question I'm looking at right now is from Edwin. Edwin, that's I follow that question. It takes us into a different topic. It might even be a research report of its own. And so I'll let somebody directly answer that from our staff afterwards. He's talking about sophisticated ways that you might have site traffic stolen. And I will express the question because it does relate to conversion erosion. He says, I was referring to situations where PPC directs the customer to the site. The customer fills out a form, but the form gets redirected to a competitor, you know, IOW theft. I think if you'll talk to our staff more about that, it may be something worth an independent research project. We did this with Google and Click Fraud, and if you've got specific cases you're thinking of, Edwin, contact us, and we'll see what we come up with that. I think I'm out of time, and any other questions that have come in, we'll answer personally via emails. I would like to and would commit to answer every question that came in today. I want to point out for you that two sessions ago, we had over 100 people ask for site reviews, and we couldn't do that. A site review is a 45-day project. But we tried to answer specific questions, and if you ask us those kinds of questions about marketing, we'll do our very best to help you. I ask for this a lot. I can't help it. I'm a researcher. Can you give me feedback? Could you send us some emails and tell us what you got out of this today, whether it was helpful for you and perhaps what was most helpful for you? I'd be very grateful. And I especially want to thank Brian Ault for the hard work he's put in and working on this report. And he has many responsibilities, and I'm grateful for it. Also, Nick, who is the senior editor on this report and who has I can only tell you that we keep him quite busy. And Nick's challenges are unique because he's in Canada, works with us full-time, but he's in Canada, and our offices are in Florida, and it makes his job particularly challenging, and I appreciate all that he's doing. And also Jimmy Ellis, because Jimmy is the optimization guru who has worked on many of these projects, and I'm telling you, and I'm not trying to flatter this team. I mean this. He turns out the work in a 40-hour period, or not 40-hour, but in a 7-day work week. He does the work of five men. He's smart and he works hard, and I'm grateful for the work he did on these things. So, thanks to everybody. I think Aaron did a lot of work on this. Aaron Rosenthal, who was in this, really built this entire NAR project himself, has also done a remarkable job, and I feel grateful for these men, and they're a resource. And if you fire us your questions,
every one of them would love to stay up late tonight answering your questions. Thank you, and we'll be back with another clinic for you in 2 weeks. Look to see this released, and also you can listen to the recording or pass it on. Drop me one note about podcasts. We're really looking hard at releasing all of these for podcasts. Would that be useful for you if you could download it and carry it with you? If you think so, please let us know. We pay a lot of attention to your feedback. You take care.